extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Club and Country. We are live from the AT&T Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. Another night of the octagonal, another night of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying, almost in the books. We're going to be watching Mexico-Panama live right now, but Canada just won up to 25 points in the octagonal. Two nice goals in this one. One absurd goal, one world-class goal. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. And a 3-0 win for the U.S., a massive win at home, a frigid win at home in St. Paul against Honduras, who roll on with nary a win. How you feeling, boys? Another late night? Got an early day tomorrow. If you're watching live right now, we're back tomorrow because the MLS preseason just continues to march on. I had a nice interview with Gonzalo Pineda we did today. That will be in tomorrow's show as we preview more teams and look ahead and get ready for CONCACAF Champions League. Doyle, how you feeling? Are you warm and fuzzy inside while everybody else is like thawing out, maybe in dangerously so in St. Paul?
I'm feeling like you should warn the people that I have the Mexico game on right over here. I'm going to be like half paying attention to the Mexico-Panama game. And I'm sure David's watching it on a second screen.
I have it somewhere. Above my head.
You have it above. Now, yeah. So everybody knows now, right?
Like if there's happy screaming, I don't know. Yeah. For you, Doyle, maybe that's Mexico because you encouraged everyone on the Twitter spaces to root for Mexico.
I tried watching the first half and I tried rooting for Mexico to score a goal because that would really put the U.S. in the strongest position as a Mexico win. But it didn't take.
Old habits die hard.
I'm really hoping that Panama pulls off the upset here. That would knock Mexico down to fourth place. That would put Costa Rica just 2 points behind Mexico. The next game for the U.S. in March is at the Azteca. There'd be a chance to absolutely break Mexico's heart. So I think that's what I'm rooting for now. But we should probably talk about the U.S. and Canada games before we get too deep in the weeds on that.
Yeah, if you hear us screaming, uttering, saying expletives under our breath, that's probably us watching this game as well. It was a big night for Greg Berhalter in the U.S. It was a big night for Canada, who just continued to roll on. 25 points here after this 2-0 win in El Salvador. El Salvador almost didn't play this game, then they did. It was a very short period of, I don't know, discontent of striking from the El Salvador players who felt disrespected, who felt, I don't know, probably underpaid by the federation and said, hey, we're not going to play. And then they came back and did. They punched above their weight in qualifying. 9 points here, but they will not be going to the World Cup unless something insane happens. I think they're right on the brink here of being completely knocked out. If Panama was to win, I don't think that they would have a chance mathematically, but Canada, it almost looks like certainly going. 25 points, that's 4 clear of the U.S. They would be 3 clear of Mexico if Mexico wins. That's still a long shot here because the performance is not very good from El Tri. Let's start with the U.S. today, though. We've had a lot of people in the mentions today saying, come on, you've been giving Canada enough credit, enough, enough, enough. The U.S., 3-0 winners in St. Paul. What's the takeaway from this game? Where do you start with this game?
Are people really in the mentions saying you're giving Canada enough?
Because those people are wrong.
You can't give Canada enough credit.
They've won
70 spots in the FIFA rankings this year. They're atop the Ocho undefeated. I think only one team has ever gone unbeaten in the old hexagonal. They took 4 points. They won at home and they drew away against both the U.S. and Mexico. You cannot give them enough credit.
You're preaching to the choir.
Alfonso Davies and Stephen Eustachio on Sunday.
Did Davies, did he twitch this one or no?
I don't know. I don't do Twitch.
I don't think he was twitching this one. I think he got, you know, the first two went so well that he walked away on that. We will get to Canada. I promise. We will talk about Canada. They're top of the octagonal. It is, you know, it's status quo for them throughout this. But for the U.S., where do you start with this? Do you start with the cold? 4 degrees at kickoff or 3 degrees, depending on how you're measuring. -12 is what it felt
like with wind chill. Yeah, let's start with that. Like, this game should not have been allowed to take place. And the Canada win over Mexico when it was -17 degrees Celsius felt like anyway, because of the wind chill back in November. That game should not have been allowed to take place. The games that Honduras schedules in the middle of the day instead of scheduling at night. The heat index is 120 degrees instead of, you know, 95. Those games should not be allowed to take place. CONCACAF has to step in and has to make sure that player safety comes first. When it's too hot or too freaking cold, as it was tonight, and I know that most players didn't get hypothermia, but two did. It's like every federation does this because they think it gives them a home field advantage. Maybe it does. But like the player safety has to come first. So it was kind of gross and kind of hard to enjoy the game. And I think that like that should be understood and underlying any analysis that we provide of how this game played out and what the final score line meant was and what it means for both these teams going forward.
Now, one of the things that you just have to bring up, which doesn't make this better or anything, but in a non-COVID scenario, you don't normally play qualifying between December and February. So even if you go to a cold setup, you're talking about October, November, or March on. It's not normally this bad. And I think that's part of what happened potentially was like two federations in Canada and the U.S. sort of just operating the way they operate. Like Canada has in the past, if they're not playing at BC Place, they have tried to play Mexico outside in October or November. And it's cold, but it's not this bad. So I think
not that's dangerous.
I think that's part of potentially what happened. And also part of why maybe FIFA doesn't have as good an eye on this, because it doesn't happen as much. Now, some people will say, and Doyle said, heat and cold. Honduras, not this cycle, the two cycles previous, they played the U.S. at noon local time because it was as hot as possible as it possibly could. And Jurgen Klinsmann thought it was a really good idea to give Omar Gonzalez his debut in that game. But that also is a way in which you could tweak that and say these should be night games when they have lights, because if it's safe for the community, because the heat as well.
So Honduras' manager, Bolillo, before this game, he hadn't even started. You hadn't even seen him in like three jackets and a skull cap and two beanies and whatnot. Said, it's not normal. It's inconceivable that a power in every sense would bring you here to play a game and get a result. The game hasn't even started. I can't wait for it to end. It's not for enjoying. It's for suffering. And Honduras suffered in this one. And I don't say that lightly. I don't say that tongue in cheek. I mean, you know, there are reports out there that the goalkeeper had to come off at halftime because of hypothermia, that another player had hypothermia. That's what you were referring to, Doyle. I mean, it felt like negative 12 with the wind chill. You saw the look. I just keep going back to the look that Matt Turner had on his face in the first half when they had that stoppage in play. I don't know. Maybe it was the second half. It all bleeds together at some point. But he runs over and he has this like, I don't know. He gets wrapped in a blanket during
the
stoppage
in
play.
I don't know what
that blanket thing is. I think it's a heated blanket. Because they said that not only could fans bring in like battery powered heating devices, I mean, they had all this set up. There was the huge long email of all the different things that they were doing to help U.S. players and coaches, but also the referees, also the Honduras side, stay warm, stay as safe as possible. But you just saw in his eyes, they're like, oh my God, like this is deep suffering. This is,
and that's a dude from Connecticut.
Much.
That guy's been through it.
I mean, Timothy Thwaites after the game tweeting, love you, Minnesota, but this was me the whole game. And it's Matt Turner's tweet of like, you know, freezing, you know, Jack Nicholson freezing in the cold. Word to everything I love, I'm retiring the next time we have to play in weather like this. Well, they didn't have to play in weather like that. That's a point to be made in this.
I just hope that the Canadian Fed and the U.S. Federation and the Central, I hope that CONCACAF steps in or FIFA steps in and puts like no more noon kickoff when it's 120 degrees. No more, you know, if the mercury drops below 25 Fahrenheit, that's it. Got to postpone the game. And I know that's tough, but that will hopefully make these federations be a little savvier, well, a little more humane with where they schedule these games and when they schedule them for, because you know, the player safety concerns are significant in situations like this, and they've been significant in the past, both up in Canada and down in Central America.
It comes down to scheduling. You just don't schedule it when you know that this is going to be the case. You're not, you say, hey, CONCACAF saying we don't approve.
Yeah.
That's not good enough. Switch it up. Find a different solution. Don't do it in St. Paul during that time. Now, it's tough to, on the competitive side, I would think, because those games got results and the U.S. got results. And so they're happy on the back end of this, and there's pressure off Greg Berhalter in this moment, no doubt about it. Yeah. What did this result mean for the U.S.? 3-0, three set pieces. You've got Weston McKinney in the 8th minute going up and getting one, and that really set the tone. It was Walker in the 37th. He wore in the armband for this one, and Christian Pulisic laid on, and then they had a goal taken off for a clear offside. But the U.S. created chances. They dominated possession. They did basically everything that you wanted them to do, and honestly, that we expected them to do, because this Honduras team is not very good. Was already broken, basically.
Yeah. And the early goal obviously helps that. I just think it was a professional and mature performance from the U.S., and that's not something you've been able to say for 4 or 5 years, because there hasn't been a ton of experience in the team, and there hasn't been a ton of success until more recently under Berhalter. And I think when you look at the way this game was played and what the U.S. did, it sort of takes you back to a Landon Donovan, Michael Bradley, Claudio Reyna-type national team of they knew the job, they were able to get it done. Once you get that early goal, I think the U.S. did jump on Honduras and try and push the issue, and Honduras sort of allowed them to. And there was moments that could have been sharper in the final third in the run of play, but the U.S. created dangerous chances, and there was good ideas. Timothy Weah was really good in this game. Weston McKinney took over this game in a way that I don't think we've seen from him. And I think the role that he played on a night when Tyler Adams is out and Christian Pulisic doesn't start and Yunus Musa is not in the team, I think that's huge. And Gio Reyna, like, these are all players who have sort of carried the team at a moment in their time. And tonight was Weston McKinney's opportunity. This whole window really has been. And he's shown that he's good enough to do it, that when he's at the top of his game, he can be a difference maker for the U.S. And I think he was a leader tonight. And so there was a lot of really good that happened. And also just the relief of being able to watch a game where they weren't a half kick away from, now you got to do the calculations of, are we going to get to the World Cup? What's the next window look like? All of that. So I think there, all of that is positive. And the big takeaway, I just think, is the professionalism of being able to handle the moment the right way.
Yeah. How much, I'll co-sign all of that.
How much pressure was Greg Berhalter under coming into this match? I think that really depends on your perspective.
Yeah, I think this is coming back.
Okay,
good. Gasman.
Yeah. Doyle's ahead of me.
Berhalter's under, you know, I think a slightly elevated amount of pressure, but he wasn't going to lose his job if the U.S. lost this game. Like, this is something that people are going to have to accept, is that if Berhalter fails to get to the World Cup, he will be fired. If he gets to the World Cup, he will not be fired. That's it. Like, that's where the line for that is. So everybody who spends all that time, especially on Twitter, talking about it, is kind of like, you know, beating a dead horse, or a horse that never even existed in the first place, maybe. I don't know. So, but obviously there was pressure, because they, you know, they got some stuff wrong against Canada. But what was really heartening to me was there was a pullout quote, basically in the middle of the second half. John Strong was talking about how, you know, they talked to Berhalter about it. He said they were looking at the tape and they were saying, like, here's the stuff that we're not doing. Here's the space we're not taking. Here's where we're not driving the game forward. And Weston McKennie apparently, you know, put his hand up and said, yeah, that, like, we like the system. System's great. We're not executing. That game was on us. And then tonight, like, it wasn't the greatest performance in the world, but it was a strong performance given the conditions. And then on top of it, like, they finally started converting set pieces. And if this U.S. team, as good as they are defensively and as good as they are with the ball, starts being a dangerous set piece team again, then, like, there's not going to be the types of heart and throat sort of nail biters that the fan base has had to endure since World Cup qualifying started in September.
It is also an answer to What do you do with Christian Pulisic? We've asked this question now for 5 days. We've talked about it for a while. One of the things that we've seen for him is, and this might be more CONCACAF specific, everyone just fouls him. Every time he touches the ball, they foul him. If we're dangerous on set pieces, you're either giving us opportunities that we can take advantage of, or they're not going to foul him, and they're not going to foul him in dangerous areas. And so that's kind of been one of the lapses, is like every time he picks up the ball, an opponent fouls him, especially if he's in his own half. Anytime he turns to start going upfield, people just hack him down. That's been the game plan all of qualifying. The U.S. has not scored off a single set piece that has been drawn for a Christian Pulisic foul. So you can keep doing it. If Shaq hits his free throws, you don't hack a Shaq. And so that's one of the things that the U.S. has struggled with, but this could be a really good solution to it and makes them a more dangerous team.
We'll get to Pulisic here in a bit. We'll talk set pieces. Who was the standout for you guys? Who was the player that coming out of this, you said he was head and shoulders above? Is it Weston? Is it Weah? Is it one of the center backs? I missed something. What'd I do? Help me.
It was Kellen Acosta. This was the Kellen Acosta defensive midfield performance that U.S. fans got three times in the knockout stages of the Gold Cup, where he was not just a solid player in the middle, but he was a guy who was controlling where on the field the game was played with his ability to switch play with either foot. He was spinning away from the first defender and able to progress the ball repeatedly into dangerous spots. And then defensively, you know, Kellen Acosta is really talented, but he has a tendency to drift. It's the biggest criticism I've always had of him is that he doesn't always find the game. And for number six, that's death. He found the game repeatedly tonight. He looked like Tyler Adams out there stopping counterattacking opportunities before they even started, which is like, I was really worried about that with Elise and Kyoto out there. If there's one thing that I am super relieved about, it was that performance from Kellen Acosta, because we hadn't seen that since August in the Gold Cup. And it was nice to get it back in this really huge moment. To me, he was man of the match. I mean, he would have been man of the match just from his play, you know, from the run of play. You add in his set piece delivery, basically had three assists. That was a hell of a game from Kellen Acosta.
Does anyone think he was shooting that set piece?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
You think that was purposeful?
I do. I think you saw him cheating off the line. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
If it was, it was amazing.
It was brilliant. It was Ronaldinho. Well.
Yeah, nice. but
Ronaldinho was not shooting his.
But I agree with what Doyle said, and it actually was, it's different than the way Tyler Adams plays. And a lot of what's required of Tyler with the Red Bull system is a lot of passing on the ground. He doesn't hit that ball in the air as well. And so he doesn't really spray it direct to the fullbacks that often, especially when he's dead center, when there's pieces around him where he can't hit it on the ground. And it works with Red Bull, right? Because you play those heavy balls, you break lines on the ground, it gets touched, it becomes a deflection transition moment. That's what they want. It doesn't work as well with the US. I think part of the issue is we don't weaponize his counter pressing and pressing enough. But in terms of what you get from Kellen Acosta versus Tyler Adams, you saw it today, as Doyle said, dictating where the game was played, breaking open the game much more often. The U.S. just has gotten sucked into one side of the field, and it takes an eternity for the ball to get to the other side of the field. That wasn't the case today. Lucas De La Torre was pretty good with it as well. Weston McKennie, I thought he connected on both sides better. Very often him and Yunus Musa are right side heavy. They want to go to their right. We saw Weston come over to the left side at times, pick up the ball. He had one really dangerous moment where he sets up Anthony Robinson by bringing the ball inside and laying it off to him. So he found the game kind of all over the field. And it all of that midfield play was stuff we haven't seen. And it all has to be couched in, this is probably the worst midfield in CONCACAF and a team that didn't really want to be there. So you have to remember that when we're talking about this, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be excited about the performances that you saw.
What is it now? The only two, three goal performances or more in this the cycle
both
are
against Honduras.
Honduras.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. There's a caveat there. There's a little bit of a flag to just say, hold on, hold on. Sample size against who, where, under what conditions. But at this point, 3-0, the final game of the window, the U.S. are going to take that, no doubt about it. In second place in the hex as it stands, 21 points. How about those set pieces? Walker Zimmerman's valuable to have in those situations. Weston is a monster.
Yeah.
Like, he is just his timing and his ability to rise. And then he just seems to have a knack to put it on frame in good spots. And some guys have it, some guys don't. He has it. Zimmerman has that just sort of like bull in a china shop vibe to him. And you could, like, before the kick's even taken, you can feel it. You can see Honduras trying to find a way. They're like, okay, well, we can't grab him. You're watching us. How do we try to, like, how do I become a wall as a human to keep this man from going where he wants to go? He still got there. It was a bummer to not to see him against Canada, and he comes back and gets the goal, captains the team. Did you take anything away from that armband? Does it feel like he is locked in now? Or is that armband purely symbolic to you? Doesn't matter.
So from what I understand, the armband is passed around amongst the players on the leadership council who are there. So the first game, it was Pulisic who wore it against Canada. It was Adams, and this time it was Zimmerman. But I didn't even realize Zimmerman was on the leadership
council. I was going to say, just him being there is pretty incredible, given where he was a year ago.
I mean, not even a year ago, given where he was in September. He wasn't part of the team in September. He wasn't going to be part of the team in October either, until, you know, John Brooks got left out. So it's been, look, he got, I don't want to say his last chance, but it felt like one of his last chances, and he has made more of it than I think anybody really had a right to expect. To me, he's the first center back on the team sheet. He's played better than Miles Robinson the past two windows. He certainly played better than Chris Richards, and you know, hopefully that Chris Richards gets back and to full health and can make that an argument again in March or April. But like, this has been just huge for Walker Zimmerman, and it's huge for the U.S. because set pieces still matter so much, and he is an A++ target on set pieces. And if they're so worried about Walker Zimmerman, that means Miles Robinson is going to have a lesser defender on him, and that means Weston McKennie is going to have a lesser defender on him as well. And I like that. I like the U.S. odds when we got three guys like that. You know, maybe a fourth if Ricardo Pepi continues to improve in the air. That like the U.S. could suddenly be a team that just demolishes you on restarts, and it was nice. Like, that's how the U.S. beat Mexico last year in the Nations League final. That was just like brutalizing them on set pieces. We hadn't seen that since that game. Saw it again tonight, and that was good to see.
And what you see from Walker in those moments is he's a big target, but they use him as the screen guy or the rub, whatever you call it. Like, he's not even – it doesn't even start out where he's the one that they're creating space for, but he's a monster in the box, and you see this in MLS too, of just staying around the ball and being ready to react sort of like a striker whenever anything falls in the box. And he also doesn't need run-up to get air, like lift. So he can set that screen, have Weston come off him, go to the near post, because he can then still get up and beat his man without having a run-up to get there. And then you see in this goal, like, there's a reason. Part of it was because Nashville sucked at scoring that he was their leading scorer, and we joked about it. But the other is he is fairly comfortable and confident in the box, and that's huge. And when you look at the center back pairing, all the other guys that you name either prefer to play on the left side or can play on the left side. And that's part of why you can put Walker Zimmerman down, because Chris Richards can play on the left. Miles has shown he can. John Anthony Brooks is a left-sided center back if he gets back into this team. Aaron Long probably could, although we might be too far away from that. So I think that's part of what Zimmerman could. Yeah. And I think that's part of what Zimmerman is. You can comfortably put him in because everyone can fit with him as well.
By the way, 6-0, 15 goals scored, one allowed for a starting center back duo of Walker Zimmerman and Miles Robinson together.
Pretty good.
It's one of those games. It's not just minnows either. There are some of those in the Gold Cup. There's a 2-0 win against Mexico in there. There's a win against Canada in there. There's a win against Jamaica in there. Now a win against Honduras as well. How about Christian Pulisic? Do we want to tackle that now? I mean, there's so much to go through in this game. I mean, between, like, I thought Lucas De La Torre had some really bright moments.
He was great.
You know, Pepe had a little bit of a forgettable game, but he broke his nose in this one. It looks like it's
broken.
Off. That's what he says. I mean, I'm going to trust him.
That's a Brian McBride move.
Yeah,
that's true.
I'm not sure that was a pure Brian McBride moment. He kind of got elbowed in the face on the ground, whereas McBride probably would have won the header and then taken one in the face. But
McBride got it in every single way possible.
Just got vibes. How about Christian Pulisic? Didn't start in this game. Was he rotated or was he benched, or does it not matter?
I say he was rotated.
I think he was rotated, but I also think that if he was playing well, he would not have been rotated.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think it's an excuse. And
convenient time to rotate.
Right. You heard I think the language John Strong was using from Greg Berhalter when they sat down sort of alluded to that of like, here are all the obvious excuses of why he wouldn't play this game. He's played the last two. Weah got left home. So it makes sense Weah would start. Aronson didn't start the first one. All these other guys haven't started. It all makes sense. But to Doyle's point, if Pulisic had been playing at his peak form the way he did in the Nations League final the last two games, there's a decent chance you would have started him, played him for 50, 55 minutes, maybe even less with the way the game played out, and then taking him out. You didn't, but you don't have to say we're taking him off. And I think that's fine. It's a three-game window. It's tight. He's not playing that much, so you want to get him playing time. But on the same on the flip side, you can't just run him out there for 270 minutes in a week when he's not really getting that on his legs. And I thought Jordan Morris took a little while to get comfortable and find his spot. But one of the things he did well in this game, which I like about his game, is I think he occupies the half space as well. And it frees up Anthony Robinson or whoever's coming underneath him in the middle, where Pulisic floats past the half space to come inside even more to find the ball. And I think it takes away that channel that Anthony Robinson can attack pretty well. And so Jordan Morris sort of lived in that space. And then in the second half, I think he got more confident in possession. And before he got hurt, he was going to be a starter for this team. I think locked in, if he can get back to that level, he has an interesting role as a second forward finisher type player who can create, but can really be that second finisher for whoever's creating on the opposite side that he's up from where he is.
That brings up an interesting question, which is who is the most important attacking player for the U.S. right now, Doyle?
Weston McKennie.
Okay, outside of the midfield. Just pure attacking. Wingers, Timothy forwards.
Weah. Yeah, it's Weah. It's Weah. It's not close at this point. You know, I would like for the pack to catch up to him, and you know, maybe we can have a conversation about that in 2 months for the next group of qualifiers, and like maybe Gio Reyna will be back and playing so well that we got to get him into the lineup. Maybe Pepe is suddenly so good that Ricardo Pepe is the most important attacker, but like right now, it's no question that it's Timothy Weah.
His movement, his ability to I don't know that we have anybody else that's stretching teams the way he is. He just seems to understand where space is going to be, and when he moves into the space, what's going to happen around and behind him. You just felt like so much running down that right side, get the ball in Weah's feet, and then run off him. He's already created the space to receive and be in a positive position. And then he just understands, like, okay, timing, bing, bing, bing. Okay, that's the combination. Okay, I'm going to faint here, cut in. Here's where it's all going to happen in front of me. The sad thing is that he just hasn't been able to stay healthy enough to do it consistently for both club and country. Like, my hope is that we see that through the World Cup, is that this is sort of his first extended run of just like, I'm in the team. Don't take me out. You can't take me out. I'm just hoping for him that he stays healthy. But this
my hope is that Lille sell Jonathan David this summer and that Timothy Weah becomes their starting star second forward, because they play a 4-4-2. I would prefer if he played somewhere where he was a full-time winger, but second forward in that system actually works pretty nicely. That's what I'm hoping for both Canada and the U.S.
Real Madrid, are you listening? Doyle's calling you, Real Madrid.
Splash that cash. Where's it at? Yeah,
Mbappe, Mbappe and Jonathan David. That's
That sounds pretty fun for us casuals out there that tune into the league every now and then. That sounds pretty fun. How about Luca De La Torre?
Really good.
He's just so, when he gets on the ball in the midfield and sees that gap in the angle and just says, okay, I'm going to go. He's fleet, man. That's the word that kept coming to mind with me. Just the way he runs, like I could watch this guy carry the ball all day.
Yeah, he did a really nice job of that, getting the U.S. out of some tight spots, sort of reversing play with clever little touches and then progressing the ball into the attacking third. Once he got to the attacking third, he's still not sharp, and he's not sharp with Heracles in the Eredivisie either. It's just a part of his game that has not come around yet, but everything leading up to that was really good. And a lot of that is what the U.S. have frankly been missing at times throughout qualifying. This was a good game to get him in. You know, we talked about this on the pregame Twitter space. It's like, ooh, you know, we're kind of throwing him into the deep end here. And it's like a little bit of that, but also like there are veterans around him. And when you're surrounded and in a familiar structure with guys who know what the moment requires, I think it can, you know, produce good results both individually and team-wide. And that's what we got from De La Torre. And I hope that he stays. Apparently he's right behind Yunus Musah on the depth chart at number 8. I hope that's where he stays at this point, because he added more than like Sebastian Legette has. Much more than Gianluca Busio has when they've gotten in and gotten a chance to play that role. So I'm not saying I'm all aboard the Luca De La Torre train, because I do want to see him do it against somebody better than Honduras. But he has the makings of a really valuable player in this pool.
And it's similar to, I think, the feeling with Kellen Acosta last year, which was his performance at the 6 was, I feel better about the pool. Not a change to the starting lineup or a drastic change, but this is a better team 1 through 23 than I thought it was a week ago. And part of that is his ability to perform at least at this level, which was, as I said, again, the worst midfield in the region. I know this is a USA Canada show. Just real quick, Julian Araujo is about to come on for Mexico and make his debut in World Cup qualifying. And I don't think I ever thought there'd be an MLS Academy product. Okay, sort of debatable with Julian Araujo, but still is. Homegrown style player that would then play for the Mexican national team. He's doing it at 20 years old. This is wild. Also, Chucky has the worst luck in the world.
While he's
Chucky just by the Chucky way. Just got injured. And by the way, Ache got a yellow card. So now Ache is out for that game against the U.S. in 2 months.
But
it's still 0-0. There's 25 minutes left. It's 0-0.
You have live half the year in Toronto or Montreal, depending, Dave.
Oh my God,
Carlos Salcedo is an RSL Academy product.
Oh my God,
just saying.
Oh my God, wait,
come on, the man has cable and it's miserable. Nobody, he always knows what's happening before anybody else.
I cannot believe this is not a goal.
Okay. That's what.
Well, all right.
It wasn't even a goal.
It would have been offside anyway. It would have been offside.
Doyle's
anyway.
Just flexing that he's.
I know.
He's like 90 seconds ahead.
I
like
my cable bill. I connect my television directly into the wall. I get instantaneous feed. You guys have to wait. This was the quote from Lucas De La Torre. Luca De La Torre. This was a really big opportunity for me. I've been waiting my whole life for this. It's nice. It's cool to hear that. It's cool to hear a guy feel that sort of validation after performance and a win like that. So I'm with you, Doyle. I hope he's around this team. He brings something different, but I don't think it changes the starting lineup, and maybe we can get to that. Any thoughts on Reggie Cannon other than I like the hair grown out a little bit? I thought he had a solid game, very Reggie Cannon game.
I thought he was always in the right place at the right time. He was not sharp at all in the attacking third. He wasn't incisive. He was having trouble. Like he saw the right pass. He just couldn't weight it correctly. But it was good to see him. Like I'm a Reggie Cannon guy. I think he's the second best right back in the pool. And I'm shocked that like this is the first time we've seen him in qualifying.
Free Reggie.
Down with Boa Vista. He's able to get into a better situation on the club level. Because I would like to see him you know, second on the depth chart come November in Qatar.
Can I ask, do you, are you including Joe Scally in that conversation?
Yeah, for now. Like, Joe Scally was really good for a couple months. He's been really pretty bad for the past couple of months. And he, like, he's got great energy, more of a wing back than a fullback at this point. Higher upside than Reggie Cannon. I don't think he has, I don't think he has a higher upside than Brian Reynolds, but
they both have higher than Reggie.
Yeah. But like he, like I'm still surprised he played as much as he did at the start of the year. And I wouldn't be entirely shocked if he plays much less over the final, you know, third of the year here. And, you know, I don't want to say has like, just comes back to earth a little bit.
Yeah.
But I like long-term, I would take, you know, for 2026, I would take Joe Scally over Reggie Cannon. I just have my doubts that Scally is going to stay on this rapid upward trajectory that he started his career with.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it with DeAndre Yedlin coming to Inter Miami and whatever type of a mess they've been as a club, and so we don't know what type of soccer they're going to play, and we don't know how good DeAndre Yedlin's going to look with them. Did he sign yet? Yeah, he did officially sign.
He just signed today. Yeah.
I think that does open the door for Reggie Cannon to take that role, which is amongst those fullbacks a bit more of a veteran presence compared to the teenagers that everyone else is, and a guy who will give you a solid performance that has a high floor, which I think is what you get from Reggie Cannon and what you saw tonight.
What I will say is that is as much as we all just sang Reggie Cannon's praises, he has never had a game as good for the U.S. as Yedlin did against Mexico 2 months ago. Yedlin was awesome in that game. And I like, it is the best game I've ever seen him play in a U.S. shirt. I've never seen Cannon play that well. My money would still be on Cannon, but it is something to bear in mind.
One nice thing for Reggie right now. Just went and looked. Looks like he has, I don't know if won the starting right back job at Boa Vista is the right way to put this, but he's gotten a string of starts through late December.
But they're playing a back five. He's a right center back. So he's kind of in the Andy Nahar role. It's a little weird.
Well, at least he's playing, man. That's been a whole thing. A debacle is probably the way to describe that stint for Reggie Cannon in Portugal so far. Anything on Pepe other than the broken nose? I mean, it's a little bit of an unremarkable game for him.
I thought he actually had a couple moments. There's one really good pass that Miles Robinson played into his feet, where he came, dropped back, found the ball in a good spot. Robinson hit a really good pass to break lines into his feet, and then he laid it off at the right time. I think he's showing you elements of that to his game. His number one attribute has to be finishing in the box. Obviously, he doesn't finish that one opportunity that fell to him, although I think if he puts it on frame, the defender blocks it because Figueroa or whoever it was had already closed in on him. I would have liked to see him get a goal for himself. I still think, and I said this on the pregame show, I think the best USMNT team can be right now is with Ricardo Pepi in form. And I think Greg Berhalter has a responsibility to help him get there. And it's not gifting someone opportunities, but it's similar to why you brought Aaron Long into the last two camps. You have a responsibility for guys who you think are part of your group to try and get them in better spots, whether it's changing clubs, getting playing time to show they're ready to move, or just mentally. And so I still think you look at El Salvador at home in Columbus in January in the cold, I think that was an opportunity that Ricardo Pepi could have started in that game and you were still going to be competitive and win. And Jesus Ferreira misses a sitter in that one. And I would have liked to see him get that opportunity. But I thought you saw some of the rust today or some of the lack of confidence, but you also saw some of why he's dangerous.
All right. Any final thoughts on the game before we switch gears and just look ahead real quick to the next window? Anything just bouncing
there
around?
There was a funny moment where Timothy Weah threw like two or three scissors out down the right side late in the game. And then he falls over. And as they're cutting away, the Honduras defender comes over and says something to him, not help him up. And I think it was like, it's 3-0, man. Like, do you really want to try that? But respect to Timothy Weah, Ronaldinho asked again, bringing his name up.
That might just be a strategy to stay warm. You got to keep moving. I mean, Walker Zimmerman said, hey, 30 seconds, if you don't move, you're getting and you might get frostbite out here. So you just start throwing scissors, go full Eddie Johnson on them. All right. Like, make sure that you're warm. How did you feel? Any thoughts about Greg Berhalter taking pictures with fans in the 82nd minute, or is that definitely just a complete nothing burger?
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I thought it was so disrespectful, and I love that. Like, that is that, like, I would be furious. I would be furious if you know, U.S. went to Honduras and the Honduras coach was doing that with Honduran fans.
Imagine, let's flip it around. At a noon game, everybody's sweating. There's like possible heat stroke happening, and that happens. That's sort of how it might have felt for Honduras. Is like, we're freezing out here. We got a guy with hypothermia in the locker room, and you're taking pictures with fans. Like, it's a strange moment. I don't have a big problem with it. I mean, like, if you want to get mad about something like that, by all means, we got 3 points. And was it a little disrespectful? Maybe. Was it just something that was done in the moment? More likely. I don't got a problem with it. Greg Berhalter is going nowhere. The U.S. is going to be second, I think, unless Doyle has seen something on this Mexico game that I haven't. It's still 0-0 in the 75th minute. That would mean that Mexico would be on 19 points, U.S. on 21, going to the final three games. You said it, Doyle, at Mexico to start, Azteca, Panama at home, and we better enjoy that one, because that might be our last home qualifier for, I don't know, a long time, 6 years maybe?
Yeah.
If you go to 2028 to start that next cycle, I mean, that's a long time away. So if you're going to go to that Panama game, savor it, and then at Costa Rica. Those are three interesting games, because those are the three teams below the U.S. right now in the standings, all fighting for 4-3-2, and not one you'd assume, because I think Canada, if they win a game in their final three, they're going. It's done. It's set. They're on 25 points right now.
Canada has clinched fourth, too.
Oh.
So at a minimum. Panama,
seven.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Because it's not 9 points.
Yeah, I don't
think so. No, because it's not to Panama. It's to Costa Rica. So, yeah, it is 9 points.
Correct.
They can't fall below four.
Yes, you are right about that. Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm. How comfortable do you feel? You feel good? Everything good right now with the program?
For the U.S.? I mean, besides Canada now, the two toughest trips in CONCACAF, we have never won in Costa Rica. Now, they don't play at Saprissa anymore, although they could if they wanted to. But we've never won there. And Mexico is as tough a trip as there is. So there's still danger in what's happening. I think I trust this U.S. team to be able to get results against these opponents head to head. At a minimum, I think they're capable of picking up a draw in Costa Rica and in Mexico, in which you then dent those teams' ability to jump you, and Panama at home the same. I mean, you really just have to not lose those games and you'll go through. Obviously, I'd like to see them win. And I think what we've seen over the last year is the U.S. has raised their game to Mexico's level every time we've played them. It's been the best soccer we've played. It's been obviously the two big results in the final and then the World Cup qualifier, Dos Aceros. So you have to have a level of confidence there. You also will have MLS players who are closer to being in form. Brendan Aaronson also is on a layoff right now because I think the Austrian league was off. So that's another guy who will be closer to form. You hoping Pulisic's getting minutes. Pepe finds his feet. So yeah, I think you should feel good and feel confident. I think they did their job this window, and they've put themselves in a good spot for the final window.
What 11 would you run out against Mexico at Azteca, Doyle?
I would not go. Rather than give you names, I will say I would not go with the first team 11.
Yeah, the Panama game's the big game.
Yeah, the Panama game is the big game. You want everyone fresh for that. And then you could run that 11 out if you still need to at Costa Rica for the final game of qualifiers. So I would go into Mexico. You know, Kellen Acosta's played in the Azteca before. You know, he's starting that game. Tyler's coming on. You know, Tyler is going to start the next two games. Luca Della Torre, you got, you know, You made your World Cup qualifier debut at home against Honduras. Well, no, the opposite end of the spectrum. Your second game is going to be on the road in the Azteca. You know, I'm not starting Weston McKennie in that game. I'm not going to start our first choice defenders in that game. The Panama game is the most important game next time. Berhalter has to make sure that everybody is fresh for that game. the best players are fresh for that game. And so I think that has to inform all the lineup choices he makes against Mexico.
You've got
Well, you're ahead of me in time. Did they keep this penalty?
Yeah, there's a Mexico PK.
Just tell me, Doyle. I just want to know. I don't care. Well, I can see in the little picture all over his red shoulder. Let me.
If you want to watch the game and you're watching it right now, basically one of Doyle's pictures is very reflective, and it just so happens to be at a literal perfect angle. To see, I was watching the Chiefs game the other day when we were recording. Yeah.
So now it's 1-0 Mexico. So if this result holds, then the U.S. would advance with a win over Panama.
Yeah.
Irrespective of any other result. Well, that's not true, because if Costa Rica wins out, Costa Rica could still leapfrog the U.S. But at the very least, if this result holds, the U.S., if they beat Panama at home, could not drop lower than fourth. So
come to us for the least confident delivery of scenarios that you've ever. I mean,
math was never my strong suit.
We got to get
Rick Laws in here.
A lot of pauses, a lot of like internal calculations going on. Like, am I right? Am I wrong? I don't know.
Smoke started Canada. Coming out of my ears.
Yeah, exactly. Canada's feeling a little more confident. 25 points. Let's hit them and get out of here. And of course, we'll be back tomorrow with another show, MLS Focus. There's a lot of news to hit that we haven't covered during the international break, as well as more previews to get to. That is the most. First of all, you can't overstate the absolute, honestly unthinkable nature of this octagonal for Canada. Undefeated, 7 wins, 4 draws, by far and away the best team. You said it earlier, Doyle, and we'll just keep saying it because it's not going to change now. Wins at home against U.S. and Mexico, draws on the road. I mean, that is perfection.
Can I throw in
2-0 winners in El Salvador tonight.
Can I throw in, just to make it even more impressive, they are what looks like will be the only team that played in front of a crowd at the Azteca as well, because it was the only game that was fully open. So not only have they done all this, they've arguably done it in the hardest way, and they've won twice in Central America. They played better than we did at Jamaica, even though they struggled in that game. So they really have hit every single challenge outside of like the first half of the first game against Panama.
Without their best player, without the region's best player through this window, without Eustaquio at his peak.
Best field player, by the way. Keylor Navas has been pretty damn impressive over the last window. He's literally carrying Costa Rica with Joel Campbell into this conversation. So I think we should say best field player from now on. With Alfonso Davies for the next few weeks.
I'll accept that. Costa Rica on 16 points, just hanging behind Panama right now. They got to be happy to see Panama down. That's what they need. No doubt about it. Will we ever see a goal as absurd, as fortunate, as wonderful as the one that Atiba Hutchinson... Again, I always go Atiba Harris. I just can't break this damn habit. I mean, well, how did he score it? Does it bounce off the back of his calf, then off his butt, then maybe off his head, and then spins over the El Salvador goalkeeper?
He shoots. It goes off the goalkeeper back at him while he's falling over. I think it hits Zavaleta's leg, then comes off of Atiba and goes back into the goal from the end line. So if anyone's not watching and hasn't seen this somehow, go look it up, because it is ridiculous. It looks like the ball's just out. And it's an absurd goal and an epic moment.
It definitely is glitchy. It's like FIFA when you're like, this shouldn't happen. Yeah. Like the physics in the game are broken. Like just break this controller and move on. I'll never play this again. Like the ball is just, it's almost like teleporting around. How did it get here? What is this bounce? There's no spin there.
It's a breakaway. Atiba Hutchinson is 38 years old. It is the second half of
He's 39 now.
He's turning 39, whatever it is. Atiba Hutchinson runs the full length of the field to make this play happen in the second half in South America, or in Central America, in his second qualifier in a week. The guy, they should definitely be doing like tests on whatever he's done with his body, because he's absurd.
Between him and
he might start a World Cup now.
Yeah, I need some life advice from him and Preki. I know our bodies aren't on the same, not on the same level. But some actionable things I can do. You know, Preki got me on the yoga. Atiba, what can you get me on? Is there diet? Is there something, some habitual thing that I have to change? And then, of course, Jonathan David scores the neat little chip to finish it off. 2-0. Any final thoughts on Canada, this window overall, on where CONCACAF stands heading into the final three match days?
Everything I said about Weston McKennie for the U.S. was true this window about Jonathan David. He had not been good for Canada pretty much the entire World Cup qualifying cycle. He scored some goals all when they were already up one or two goals or in games that were of less consequence. He just didn't look comfortable with this team. He doesn't dominate the ball. And in games where Davies hasn't been there, he sort of floated in and out. Kyle Larin really has been the go-to impetus of the attack. Jonathan David stepped up this week. And when they needed him more than ever without Alphonso Davies, scores the huge goal down in Honduras to, you know, change the history there and get rid of those demons. Has a great performance. The assist for Kyle Larin on the opening goal, which was just boom, boom, so quick. That connection's growing between them, and then gets the goal to close it off today. And I thought today and at times against the U.S., you saw them sort of play through him. And there were moments where it was like, we need a release, and they got the ball to Jonathan David's feet, and he could draw a foul or get them out of a tight spot and give the defense a second to breathe. And it's just impressive what Herdman's done with the full pool. I mean, Scott Kennedy was supposed to be the starter, gets hurt, isn't even around the team, starts two games for them this window. Huge performance. He rotated Richie in and out of the group as well. He has strengthened the depth of this team as qualifying has gone along. They've gotten better and better, not just on the top end, but on the bottom as well.
Canada making history. Christian Jack tweeting that they are the first team since the final round of World Cup qualifying was created back in 1997 to win six games in a row in this round.
Jeez.
They are very close, if not already in, to go to the World Cup.
And remember, they weren't even supposed to be here.
Yeah.
They weren't even... That was a scenario, right, David? Like before,
if COVID hadn't happened and it was just the hex, it was going to be based off FIFA rankings. And El Salvador was too far ahead of Canada.
They didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Canada would have ended up seventh. They would have missed out based upon FIFA rankings because of that collapse in the 2019 Gold Cup against Haiti. And then the loss to the U.S., the big loss to the U.S. in the Nations League semifinals. And the door got opened for them, and they took advantage, and they have been the best team in the region throughout.
Speaking of FIFA rankings, that's going to determine what pot you're in for the World Cup draw. Canada, we clawing think. Their way. Yeah, I confirmed.
Canada, oh, you found clawing, it somewhere.
Yeah, yes. Thanks. Canada clawing. Christian Jack once again is providing us with live information
Thanks.
As we
Thanks,
speak.
KJ.
Yeah, we could do the. Do you want to do the calculations here live? You want to?
You want to start
the one divided by two? No, I think that's it for us. Big wins today.
You don't want to stay on for the final 5 minutes of Mexico Panama
and have us watch you watch it.
Yeah, should we just watch it in the reflection of your photo here behind you? You know what? I think I'm going to pass on that. We got another show tomorrow for you, folks. We are talking to Gonzalo Pineda, talking to Atlanta United, doing some other previews, hitting your mail, and of course all the news we've missed over the last week and a half. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Of course, you can also watch Every Extra Time on YouTube. We appreciate you. We enjoy living this North American soccer life with you. With that, enjoy your night, everybody, or your day. If you're listening tomorrow, we'll have another episode up for you very, very soon. Adios.